Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So, you know, this next story is kind of about how unlikely or likely it is that we would even be in the same room together.
Right. I'm the granddaughter of a slave.
And I'm descended from the Dutch who founded Manhattan.
Right. And I always kind of wonder, you know, how did my people get here? And I've always been slightly concerned that, like, I really don't know. It's from some part of West Africa, but I have no idea really where.
And I know how my people got here. And what I wonder is, did they own people? Were they slave owners?
The story of how our paths might have crossed is actually told in the books of David Eltis, professor of history at Emory University. He co-authored the Atlas of the Transatlantic Slave Trade, and one of the most interesting things he documents is that only about 4% of all people taken from Africa went to the United States. David, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Only 4% of the slaves through the whole trade ended up in the States?
Yes, it's actually slightly less than that.
Really?
It's just below 4%. It's rather incredible given the pattern, the demographic pattern that exists in the Americas today, or indeed right at the end of the slave trade. It's pretty amazing too. But that is indeed what comes out of the years of research that we've put into this.
So what do you attribute that to? Like, how did 4% get to what we've got here?
I think it's the basic explanation is differential patterns of demographic growth. Most of the black population of what is now the United States in 1860 were actually born here. And the population that went to the Caribbean and Brazil, which was far, far more numerous, in fact did not experience the natural rates of population growth that occurred in the temperate Americas.
That is a crazy, interesting irony that in fact the growth of the African-American population in the United States is due to the fact that slaves thrived, as horrific as slavery was, in the United States, and they didn't elsewhere in the Western Hemisphere. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. It took a while, but they eventually, the black population began to grow at rates slightly below the white population, but nevertheless much faster than the black population elsewhere in the Americas. Partly it's a question of no slaves brought over on the slave trade to North America that actually grew sugar. And sugar was the killer. It was, it had particularly horrific conditions. And sugar was the driver of the slave trade.
Is it the case that, as far as American expansion is concerned, that slavery was partially an economic engine that drove the colonial expansion?
It was, and in fact, I think that explains in part that differential you started out with at the beginning. How come so many people of African descent are in the Americas when so few arrived? The fact is, the United States was a very thriving society in economic terms, quite apart from slavery, and that was associated with these kinds of patterns.
But David, you mentioned earlier that ours was particularly race-based, our slavery system. And so given that we're in this alleged post-racialist society here in the States, what do you hope the results of this research is actually going to be on the psyche of Americans?
What we're actually doing right now is reintegrating populations of the globe which developed very separately, and this is simply one phase. So the mix of peoples living together is going to continue to increase, and the slave trade is part of that process. It was the first major step towards reintegrating the world's population, the slave trade is simply the most horrific and most dramatic phase of that process.
I mean, the idea that reintegration, as you call it, from the pre-contact times, would be begun with slavery, an institution, the legacy of which we are still reliving, I guess.
Yes.
The takeaway is that, you know, you have a role in slavery, whether you know it or not, white or black, racially mixed or so-called racially pure.
Yes, absolutely the case, yes.
But I have to say, I can't. We're not even a country that's seriously, openly, honestly dealt with the issue of race.
I do hope that this is something that can just sort of open it up as a conversation, you know, and as a starting point. I really do hope that.
Yes. Yeah. I certainly hope so, too.
In your research, what was the most surprising person who was, say, confronted with a fact or a relationship or a revelation that you were able to gauge the reaction of?
Do you know the story of Venture Smith?
No.
He was African-American who actually purchased his own freedom in Connecticut in the late 18th century. And there's now a society. In fact, Congress is going to pass a resolution in February recognizing his existence and celebrating his existence. And there's now a network of descendants from Venture Smith. We know where he's buried. We know the land he owned. He was able to purchase land after he bought his own freedom. And we were able, with the database which supports this atlas and which is available at slavevoyages.org, to isolate the vessel that he was brought to the Americas.
Wow.
And,
oh, my gosh.
And this was in the 1730s.
And, of course, the records of the owners of Venture Smith are also available. And so
yes.
this atlas is really about telling both of those histories simultaneously.
Yes. One of the early maps in the atlas, and there's 189 of them, actually shows the ports in the Atlantic world from which slave vessels departed, and there isn't a port of any significance which is not represented on that map. Everyone's heard of the big centers of, you know, Rhode Island or Liverpool, England, but in fact, it's the case that, especially in the early part of the 18th century, every little port that could afford it tried to establish a slave vessel, slave voyage, and most of them succeeded. And it's simply a reflection of the fact that slavery and the slave trade were totally accepted. It was not a moral issue at that point.
It was a part of the economic fabric of our country.
Absolutely so. You went into it if you thought you could make money.
Yep.
It's a sort of horrific version of the entrepreneur story.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Well, David Eltis, thank you so much for being with us. David Eltis is a professor of history at Emory University and author of The Rise of African Slavery in the Americas. He co-authored what we've just been discussing, the Atlas of the Transatlantic Slave Trade, which includes some really striking maps that show how, when, and where the trade routes moved. We've got a link to them on our site, thetakeaway.org. It's really an amazing story.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, the story of Venture Smith reminded me that, you know, again, slavery wasn't just in the United States. Brazil abolished slavery in 1888. Even though, as David Eltis says, it wasn't as big of a growth industry as it was in the United States. It's just a bizarre and horrific irony.
And the legacy of it still continues to this day.
Also on our site, we've got more extras from today's show for you. Contributor and personal finance expert Beth Kobliner's got some recommendations for all of you wanting to donate money or stuff or time this holiday season. You can also download the free Takeaway iPhone app where you can send us photos, videos, or audio of anything you want. Here's a special project. Those of you who caught last night's lunar eclipse, record your voice telling us where you were, what you saw, and more, and send it our way. Download the app at thetakeaway.org. All you aspiring Galileos out there, don't have an iPhone? Just call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry with Majora Carter, sitting in for Celeste Headlee all this week. This is The Takeaway. Hey.